This is Embracing Change with Lakrita Bowman and Jennifer Osborne.
Hello there, folks. Welcome back to Embracing Change. This is episode 49. Hard to believe it's 49. We've been going through a lot of different topics related to resetting the comparison of body, soul, and spirit. And today we're going to talk about sense and nonsense and how that relates to our spirit life, our relationships, in a lot of different ways. When you were thinking about sense versus nonsense, obviously there's common sense, there's, I think you would call it natural sense, and then there's nonsense, which is doesn't add up.
Exactly.
Like, it doesn't add up. And I've heard people say you can't learn common sense. I don't know if that's true, because I think you can be taught to be a critical thinker, right?
Exactly.
So I don't want to pronounce that over anybody when they go, oh, well, they can't learn common sense. Well, yeah, you can.
Some things are just common, though. You know what I mean? It's just, first you look up the definition, what's common, and then you put sense with it. Some things just ought to come natural to you, and some things you have to learn. I think what people are really saying, you can't, is street sense. There's street sense, too. And
yeah.
There's spiritual sense, and then there's soul sense, and there is body sense, you know, and the body is the natural five senses, right?
Yeah.
The taste, the smell, your hearing, you know what I'm saying, your sight, your touch. Those are the natural five senses of the body. Then in your soul, you have senses, how you think, how you articulate, the algorithms of how you perceive things and
how
you process it. Those are senses.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so then in your spirit, there's discernment. There is something deeper that comes with it than just natural and even soul. There's something that says your intuition, you know what I mean? You have this sense, like you can have your first, they always say you should always go with your first thought, because usually your first thought is your cleanest thought. When you start getting into your own thinking and debating yourself is when you get in trouble.
Sounds like when you take a test, they say, go with what you think the first answer is.
Because usually it is the true, it's the right answer.
Yeah.
It's when you get in there and begin to debate yourself, then you end up with no sense, I think.
Yeah.
So, you know, then it doesn't become so common.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Then it's nonsense.
Yeah.
And then you get the test back and you realize, I studied for this. I knew that answer. What happened? You start debating your own senses.
Talking yourself out of it.
Yeah, exactly. And so you began to do things that was not as common sense as it should have been. Does that make sense?
Pun intended.
Mm-hmm.
It does make sense. But at the same time, I guess, you can teach someone, though, to think critically, right?
Oh,
to
yeah.
ask questions, like...
Be curious.
Yeah.
You know, and it's always about the things... I think everybody has the ability to think critical. Critical thinking is necessary, but I think that I'm 61, and so I don't think as much... that I was taught in my age, in my generation, to be critical. You know, we were taught to just do what we was told, to not hardly ever think.
Right.
You know what I mean? And don't ask no questions, and don't be curious. And so you learn how not to utilize that part of your brain as much as you need it to. So then I learned a lot of street sense by other people's behavior. I learned what not to do, or I learned what to do, or how I wanted to create my own thinking. So I think that some things that are make sense and some things are nonsense. And then there's common sense, and then there's street sense, and then there's spiritual, natural sense. And then there, you know, so you have the natural, you have the common, which is to me the soul. And then you have the spiritual senses, where there are ways of discernment and where you learn the relationship you have with God and what looks like, you know, the way man thinks is not always the way God thinks. And so the way he will do something ain't the way the way I would do something isn't necessarily the way he would do it, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, his ways are definitely higher than our ways.
And that's what the Bible says. Yeah. His ways are higher than ours. His thoughts is higher than ours. So he's already ahead of the game way before we get there, because he already knows right now where I'll be this time next week, where I'm only here right now. I know where I hope to be this time next week, but that don't mean I will be there. But I hope to be there.
Right.
But he already knows if I'm going to be there.
Right, because he is not bound by linear time. He
exactly.
can go backward, forward. Like, time is his. He created it. He regulates it. It's all about him.
And that's why I want to talk a little bit about the, not necessarily the balance, but the measurement the rhythm. I like to call it rhythm of the soul, the body, the soul, and the spirit. And I think that there's things that we can do to regulate the senses of our lives.
Oh, yeah.
And that is, I believe we can meditate. That means quieting yourself down. Meditation, if you look under the meditation in Hebrew, it means to, I don't know if you know this, but it means to chew, to swallow, to regurgitate, bring it back up, to chew some more, to swallow, to bring back up. It's a continuation, truly. That
wow.
means that, because with every time you bring it back up, it's like a muscle you're using in your memory that makes you meditate on it. It becomes part of your existence.
It's like digesting it, I
exactly.
guess.
Exactly.
You're like breaking it
down.
Yeah.
And every time you chew some more, you're breaking it down some more.
Yeah.
And to the point where it becomes naturally in your mouth when you swallow it, it almost becomes nonsense. You can't sense it. You don't know it's there, because it just naturally becomes part of you. That's real meditation. It's about really making it a part of your existence.
Meditation is great for grounding you and getting you quiet before God or man, whatever, you know what I mean? Like, just getting quiet to where you can hear yourself. You can hear God. You can hear the world around you a little bit.
And you can hear your own self talking to yourself.
Right.
Sometimes, and realizing that the stuff you're saying to yourself makes no sense. It is not sensible. It's like you have to tell yourself to be quiet. No, seriously, I talk to myself all the time. I used to remember when I was growing up, people would say talking to yourself meant you was crazy. I said, no, you better talk to yourself, because if you're not talking to you, then you're letting everybody else talk to you, and you really don't know what you're thinking yourself.
Mm.
So, I need to talk to me. I need to know who I am, more so than you need to know who I am, because I need to be able to ask myself, why did I do that? Why are you thinking like that? Where is that coming from? How did you get here? I need to be able to answer those questions, not you. Even when I go to a counselor, the reason you go to counseling is to hear yourself talk. Really, it is.
Yeah, that's good.
And it just makes you feel like you're not unstable because you have another person across the room, but you're counseling yourself. That person is not telling you what to do. They're guiding your own thoughts, because you talk long enough, you'll tell yourself what's wrong with yourself.
Or they'll ask you a question. I had a counselor that would counter with a question.
Exactly.
Where were you in that moment, or what were you thinking? I'd be like, oh, let me.
So that's critical.
That.
That's teaching you critical thinking. That's teaching you common sense. That's teaching you how to be able to see what makes sense and what doesn't make sense. And
yeah.
Why did I do that? And why did I not do that? And why come I'm holding my own self back? Because nobody's really holding me back worse than I'm holding myself back. What is the fear? What is the apprehensiveness? What is the anxiety? What is the worry? Why am I not acting out on what I know to be true?
There was a book that came out a few years ago that talked about the power of intuition and how we as people have been taught, especially women, to ignore that because intuition isn't real. And they said, the power of intuition will tell you if you're walking into a dangerous situation, like, you know, the hair on the back of your neck prickles. You kind of know something isn't right. You feel it, you sense it. And yet our society tells us to turn that off, to be strong, to be brave. Don't think about that way. And so it just lends to learning common sense. Like, you need to lean into those things that you're perceiving and you're like, process them. Don't ignore them. Like, God gave you that intuition, that curiosity about the situation I'm walking into, the feelings, the interpretations, and you should not ignore them.
And it's called wisdom, understanding,
yeah,
knowledge. You know, those are just, you know, to read, like I was saying, I'm reading a book, I'm just finishing up. I've read it before, but I'm reading it again. And it's called The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ritz. And, you know, the thing about it is, it's just a practical guide to personal freedom is what it's called. And he has four pieces that he talks about in this whole book. And what his first one is be impeccable with your word. Like, in the Latin, M means without, and then peccable means sin, so without sin. In other words, be without sin with your word. So you have to be willing to say to yourself, I'm going to let, and the Bible says, let your yea be yea and your nay be nay. In other words, anything in between that is double-minded, unstable in all your ways. So let your yea be yea, your yes be yes, and your no be no. Most of us don't do that. We get into people pleasing. We get into, what are people going to think about me if I say no? What if I don't want to volunteer when they ask me? What if I don't want to give? When I'm at the store and at the cashier, they say, do you want to give your change to this organization? And you say no. Sometimes the cashier will look at you like, oh my God, I cannot believe. But I'm not giving to that because that's not what I'm choosing. That's what you all have chose to do. So you're using my money, really, to make your bent. You're not really giving nothing as a corporate organization. You're really taking my money and making it your money. And then when you give it to that organization, you round up everything you raised by the change that you got from the other people that bought stuff in your store. And hopefully you're matching that. I'm not sure you are. But in my opinion and my perspective, you took my money and made yourself look good. So it's like, no, be impeccable with your word. Do what you say and say what you do. But don't go back and forth. I think there's nothing wrong with common sense. I think the flexibility in common sense is that I can change my mind. But if I change my mind, be honest. Don't make up some lie. How many times do you call into work, no, you ain't sick? But you call into work anyway and say, I'm sick.
Yeah.
So your word ain't impeccable.
It's not honest for sure.
And it's not being honest.
Right.
So, and it's about, what are some words that have been spoke over you that's not true, that you've bought into? How much sense does that make? You don't realize it, though, until you start feeling and dealing with it. And then you realize, I do not agree with that. As you get older, you look at, why do I think like that? And it goes back, I think, I don't know how many episodes ago, it goes back even with the cutting off at the ends of the ham. Why do we do that?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So until we get to the real root of why we do what we do, we cannot be impeccable with our word, because we're usually not impeccable with ourselves. And one of the other agreements is, don't take anything personal. Well, when I read that one, you know, when he talks about that, don't take anything personal, he is saying, usually it's not about you, but we make everything about us. I make everything about me. Them people ain't thinking about me, but I make it about me some kind of way. So I take it personal. And then all of a sudden, when I take it personal, then I get this attitude and my mood changes and my thinking changes. And then all of a sudden I'm walking into a room, you know what I'm saying, bringing that negative energy, you know, and that person ain't even, they hadn't even thought about me. Most of the stuff they doing is about them.
Right.
So why am I taking it so personal? Why do I have a need to defend myself, protect myself, and keep myself safe? Yeah, I understand the survival skills that we all, but God doesn't cause us to want to survive. He wants us to thrive.
Right.
And he so does. Most of us never really learn the sense of thriving, because we too big on trying to learn to stay into surviving.
Right. Right, right.
And so I've learned, I'm learning, I'm not all the way there, but I am sure enough pushing past the mark to be thriving in my life.
Yeah.
Not to take everything somebody does personal and be okay with saying to that person, can you tell me what you meant by that? When you were doing that, was that towards me? Or asking that person, what's going on with you? Why would you say that? Why would you do that?
Right.
What's that about? Because then you take it away from you and you give them the responsibility to look at it for themselves.
It reminds me of a situation you and I were in when you were carrying a heavy load. There was an issue you were dealing with, and you had gotten very quiet, and you and I hadn't talked for a while. And I thought, well, maybe I've offended her in some way that, you know, she's gotten so quiet. So I had said, are we okay? And you said, Jennifer, we're fine. It isn't always about you. And I was like, okay. And I really thought about that. And I was like, yeah, I guess it doesn't always have to be about me. But, you know, again, going back to how you perceive things and how you process them, in a household with a mentally ill parent, you learn to process everyone the way you processed him. And that is, if something's going wrong or it feels like it's going wrong, it must be about me. And it's relearning.
Not to take everything personal.
No, that's right.
It's not personal.
Right.
Don't take it personal. You have to retrain your brain.
Right.
Not to think that this is about me.
Right.
But I also say it's nothing wrong with asking yourself first. Check yourself. Evaluate yourself. Weigh yourself. You know what I'm saying? Touch yourself. Smell yourself. You know what I mean? Taste yourself. You know when you've done something to someone else. You do. In your deep level, you know when you've either talked about someone when they weren't around, you either intentionally, you know what I'm saying, push them back because you're trying to process something they did say or didn't say. And it's okay to even say to that person, you know what, this isn't really about you. This is me processing something that has happened to me, and I need to find out why I'm feeling this way. I think you and I had a talk today, and I said, I sometimes wonder about this particular person and why they irritate the heck out of me. Well, God is showing me that usually when you have gotten healthy in one area and someone else hasn't, then they are a reflection of who you was, and sometimes their behavior irritates you because you realize that they are being who you were. And I even have to look at that and say, I'm not going to take that personal. That's their issue. That's their insecurity. That is their need to feel like they need to control everything. That is not my need anymore. And so I don't need to control the world. The world doesn't revolve around Lakrita. So guess what? You know, it's not about me. It's not about me. It's not about me. I'm not going to wake up in the morning and say, it's all about me. It's all about me. It's all about me. Because it's not about me. The world does not revolve around me.
Yeah, but some of it's survival. I mean, like when you've had to process a traumatic place all the time, you learn very unhealthy ways of how to relate to people. Like if they're in a bad mood, I've probably done something, so I have to fix it. Like that was my experience growing up. So I had to learn to say, no, if that person's having a bad day, they're just having a bad day. It probably has zero to do with me, and unlearn all of those survival things that you learned growing up and learn the right way. But you've got to be willing to say, I need to accept that this person, while they're in a bad mood, maybe they've yelled at me or whatever, doesn't necessarily make it about me. And I have to be willing to say, did I really do anything? No, I didn't. So it's probably not me.
And it goes back to even what you said on the last episode about being known. If you know that person, you will not evaluate it based on your trauma. You will love them enough to let them be who they are without attaching it to you.
Right, right. You got to get to that healthy place,
though.
And so
that healthy place is learning those behaviors, is that this isn't about me. I can't keep taking everything personal.
Right. That's a great, great thing to live with. I mean, as far as a principle in your
life.
And
so even with that, it's like, you know, sometimes like one of the things I've learned is just like, getting at least 15 to 30 minutes a day of movement, because it can help my thinking process.
Oh, yeah.
It can help me process the energy that I have in my soul, where my will and my intellect and my spirit, I mean, my intellect, my emotions, and my will live. It helps me process the emotional piece that I'm dealing with, or it helps me just to be moving. It helps my heart. It helps my body. It helps my spirit. That's another common sense thing, or another sensible thing to do, is just 15 minutes a day, just get somewhere. Even if you run in place at home, just move. Get your heartbeat up. Let it move, you know, because you'll be amazed with how stagnant we've become in our thinking patterns and in our ways of living and in our survival skills, because we're not shaking up stuff enough to make it make sense to us.
Yeah, that's good.
And so, you know, you getting involved with something bigger than you, getting it, you know, volunteering, you know, finding out what, you know, getting around people that think don't always look like you and think like you and be like you. To me, I think that's just common sense, but that ain't common to everybody. A lot of times we like to be around people like us because it makes us feel good about who we are.
Right, it's an echo chamber.
Exactly.
And you need to get out of that echo chamber to see what other people think, how other people have experienced the world. It grows you. It grows you.
And it challenges
you. And enriches you.
And it enriches you, and it challenges you, and it lets you see that the world is not black and white. It's and both.
And it's
gray. And it's bigger than your world. I always say we're only five people away from everybody we need to know. But first of all, we got to get to know more than yourself. You got to know yourself first, and then you got to get to know somebody else. And that person may know somebody else, and then that person. And whatever it is, I believe that how prayers get answered is two ways for me. It is primarily through His word. I can look at His word and use my common sense and try to look at how the word of God makes sense to me, and this should be the right thing. It goes back in Deuteronomy when it says, I put before you today life and death. Let me give you the answer. Choose life.
Yeah.
You know, but choosing life means for me to do some things against the grain of what you just said about the patterns of thinking, how I do it, when I do it, you know, not taking everything personal, be impeccable with my own words, let my yay be yay, my nay be nay, don't be double-minded, be open to insight or wisdom from other people. But the biggest way that I believe God answers prayer is through His people, and not even through His people. He will use even the people who are not for Him for me. You know what I mean? So, but the biggest resource that I believe He uses is people. And so often that's why I think our survival skills get in the way of our thriving skills. Because if I don't trust you, if I don't let go, if I don't open up, if I don't let you in, I really can't get my prayers answered. You know what I mean?
And for you especially, because people were the main vehicle by which you were disappointed and wounded. And so now to allow them to be the vehicle by which you hear from God, whew, big jump.
It's a big jump. And I had to learn that, though, that people is who hurt me the most, but people is those resources he's going to use the greatest. And so in developmentally, even though I said early on in my life that He came and got a 32-year-old chronological person from prison. He spoke to her. He spoke to himself in her, but he was coming after the 5-year-old innocent little girl that was broken and hurt, even though she was running the show out of her distrust and her lack of knowledge and her lack of common sense and her lack of, you know, just all of the things of her lacking, because she needed to protect herself and she needed to defend herself and she needed to keep herself safe. And all of those things, but she wasn't really doing that. She was doing the opposite, because she had came into agreement, going back to letting your word be impeccable, she had came into agreements that was made over her by other people. When you look at the word molestation, we talk about molestation because we think about sex. But let me tell you what molestation means. It just means abuse. We've all been molested somewhere. Some of us, true enough, sexually. But some of us with words, we've molested each other with words, with thoughts, not just with deeds sexually, but just in behaviors itself. If you look and define the word molestation, it just means to turn into perverted ways. And so when you look at how even the enemy in the beginning of the world, he molested Adam and Eve. He made them believe something that was not true. He changed their perception of who they were. And so therefore, the original, their who they were originally became tainted, and it became dirty based on the way he spoke to them and then how they believed it. And it's the same thing with us. We do the same thing. We allow people's inability to speak truth to us, so their truth becomes our truth. So then that's why we take it so personal. And then we grow up all of our lives in survival skills instead of thriving, because we took what they said to be the more of the truth than what God has already said about us. And so, you know, the third agreement that he talks about is don't make assumptions. Come on. How many times have you assumed something?
Oh, probably multiple times a day, every day.
Exactly.
That may not be true.
Because then somewhere in order to not assume would mean I have to be vulnerable enough to be curious. And if I'm vulnerable enough to be curious, that means I have to be open enough to learn. And if I'm open enough to learn, I'm admitting that I don't know. And that is vulnerability within itself.
Oh, yeah.
And so if I'm making assumptions on everything, then I already believe that what I'm telling myself is the truth. And so I've created these stories. How many stories have we created that ain't even true? And we create the whole characters. We have the main character or the main actor. Then we have supporting actors. And then we have, you know what I'm saying, backup actors.
And the protagonists and the antagonists.
And we have all of those in a story that we tell ourselves. That's what assumption is. Assuming is the story we tell ourselves. Brené Brown talks about it all the time. It's what is the story I'm telling myself? There's a situation I'm in now, and I'm constantly fighting against telling myself something that is not true. Because guess what? It don't even matter. If it is true, so what? I know I have not done nothing to anybody. So if that person is dealing with something about their lives and they've decided to make decisions, that has nothing to do with me. Do you see what I'm saying? So I'm constantly saying I'm not going to tell myself these stories. But you have to be so aware and be so present, and then you have to have some sense of where is this coming from? Why do I need to tell myself this story? What does that mean? Because again, the reason we'd like to tell ourselves the stories and assume, because we like to be right.
We like to put it in a neat little box and wrap it up and say, I've got it all figured out and this is it. And it's probably wrong.
99.9, I've learned throughout this new walk of mine that half the stuff I thought was true was not true at all.
Yeah, yep.
And so I've had to relearn new truths and then live by the new truths based on what the Word of God has said about me, based on what God says about me, and then based on what I begin to tell myself about me, and not assume the worst about everything.
Right.
Because I can't change it anyway. And I've been spent hours and hours and days and months thinking about a situation, and half the stuff we think about don't even happen.
Right.
And then when it don't happen the way you think it should have happened or you thought it was going to happen, then you look at yourself and say to yourself, why did I think that way? I wasted all that time.
Well, why was I worried?
Because you was assuming.
Yeah.
Don't make assumptions. And the fourth one is, you know, always do your best. I love that one. You know what I mean? When I know that I've done the very best that I could, I don't need to be validated. Somebody said something to me the other day, and it's like, you know, I just want to make you look good. Please don't make me look good, because if you start making me look good, that would be your motivation. And the day that I don't make you, validate you, you're going to be mad at me anyway. Do your best, because your best is your best. It may not be at the level of my best, but it's your best. And so as long as you know what you're doing and you know that at the end of the day you gave it all that you had, why do you need my validation? Validate yourself. Give yourself a high five.
That's
Cheer
right.
your cell phone.
That's right.
You know, root for yourself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So often we need other people's rooting and cheering. And don't get me wrong. I'm not saying it's all or nothing. It's and both. But I think we ought to be our greatest cheerleaders. I ought to know at the end of the day I gave it all I had. Today when you and I was exchanging information for my time away, I know I gave it my best. Now, if it gets screwed up when I'm gone, it has nothing to do with me. You know what I mean? I did my stuff. So I'm just saying, no, if something happens, I can't take ownership of that.
Right. You would not have been involved, and you imparted everything you knew to impart. You did your best.
I did my best. And I think so often, if we don't understand how to do that, we run across that way of not, you know, our bodies fall apart. When I don't do my best, when I know I'm eating stuff I shouldn't eat, you know what I mean? When I'm not getting enough sleep, when I'm not getting enough rest, you know what I'm saying? I'm not exercising. I'm not doing things that I know that is my best, but yet I want some outcome when I've not given it my all. Come on.
There's a scripture that says, for a man that knows to do good and doesn't do it, to him, it is sin. So if you know to do good, if you know to do your best, if you know to treat yourself well and you don't do it, while it's not a defined sin under the Ten Commandments, it says to you, it is sin. Like you're going against what you should be doing.
It really is under the Ten Commandments.
Well, let me tell you where it is.
No, it's lying. Thou shalt not lie. Thou shalt not steal. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if I know that I'm not doing, you know what I'm saying, to know to do good and I don't do it, I'm choosing to choose the wrong thing to do. And you know what I mean? So to me, that's like I'm lying to me.
Right. And it could be in a million different situations throughout your day. It could be doing good to someone. Helping somebody with their groceries, if you can do that, or whatever. You know what I mean? Just if you know to do good and you don't do it, to you it is sin. And it's like, I don't know. It just reminds me of that agreement of doing your best is doing good, because you're doing good for you. You're trying your best.
And that's what doing your best is. You know, so just even when I read this book and I looked at this book and I seen it, you know, it just has some comical, practical sense in it. It was just common sense. Some of this stuff, and it looks easy, but like he says, it's not. To let your word be impeccable, you know what I mean? To not take it personal.
Yeah.
To not make assumptions, and to do my best seems simple. Like, oh, these are just four little principles that I can ace these. But you know what I found out? I cannot. Because I'm always... You know, it's something in us, innate in us, that wants us not, and that's because we've been born, wrapped in iniquities, born into sin. So there's a part of us that I call our soul that will always be against my spirit. And they will, you know, but the difference is my spirit is not going to fight to have its way. My soul will fight every time. My will, my emotions, my intellect will fight every time. The very thing that looks good and makes sense. It's so subtle how our will and our emotions and our intellect work together against us. And I'm going to talk about that in the next session as we wind all of this up, about just stories. I'm going to talk about stories of my own process, of how I've had to fight my body, how I've had to deal with pain, how I've had to, you know, deal with my own self, thinking that that was the best decision, only before learning how to now put people around me to bounce things off of and not fight them because I want to do it my way.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. All right, guys, we're at the end. It's been really good. So come back for our last episode of this season. We're going to wrap up a lot of things. Like she said, we're going to touch on some stories and just kind of summarize and expand. There we go. We'll see you guys. Hi, guys. Every week we get the honor of spending time with you, sharing our hearts, and offering insights into all the ways we get turned around as people, and hopefully showing an escape route to better choices. Another place that is offering the same type of path for better opportunities is City Gospel Mission. Since 1924, they've been a beacon of hope to the homeless, those recovering from life-controlling issues, youth, and to those needing job services. If you'd like to volunteer or donate, you can visit www.citygospelmission.org. That is www.citygospelmission.org.
Thanks.
You've been listening to the Embracing Change podcast. Music production and mastering by Gone Coastal Productions. Podcast editing and production by Jennifer Osborne. Podcast copyright 2021 by Lacreta Bowman.